American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day! This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Monday, October 20th, 2008. And that's right, you're listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global Sit-Red up on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rent Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening and distributing this program, you are too! Aren't you special? Thanks so much for doing that. Why? Because you're freeing your fellow man. And what a good idea that is, isn't it? Really? I mean, it makes kind of sense to not think that your fellow man is your enemy. You know, that's something that we seem to get. The fellow man. What a crazy concept that is. You know, treat the fellow man with some kind of dignity and respect. I don't really know whatever happened to that notion, but that seems to have gone by the wayside in the last, 10 years or so. Maybe the golden rule by anybody's standard. I don't know. Everybody seems to be freaking out and trying to look for reasons to hate each other, and I think it's kind of a bad idea. And one of the ways we get around things like that is with one thing and one thing only, and that is education. And education comes with information, and that's what this show is all about. You can follow up on these news stories, and you can check my facts by going to my live journal, and you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This is a free broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, Non-Surveillum Radio, Osprey Networks, CreekRadio.net, Radio Red Mercury, Second Life Node, Archers. Every Thursday night we broadcast at grid coordinates 137-102-9999. However, there's been a light speed type evolution thing that's going on inside of Second Life right now, so as the internet, because, you know, 1 equals 3, so 1 equals 3 in teraflop time, so the faster a computer can go, the closer the speed of light, time slows down, so that's why you have temporal shifting and re-record the show 4 or 5 days early before it actually goes live. You'll understand once you come on board with the rest of us crazy people over here on permanent computer hooked in server monk's side. And without any further ado, let's skip all the crap and get straight to some news, because we got some good stuff that we found this week. I'm beginning to embrace the whole idea that we're all going to just wind up being slaves to robot masters. And if we can somehow find a good way to get rid of the notion that being a slave is a bad idea, hey, maybe that would be a plan, right? You know, maybe if you just learn to love slavery, right? That's a good idea, isn't it? Wrong? Not a good idea. You know, not a good idea. I finally did see that movie, just before I get into the news. Never mind, I will make a comment. I finally broke down and saw that film, Children of Men. There was so much hype about that film that a lot of people wanted me, like, I got, like, huge email. They're like, Sean, you gotta see Children of Men, oh my god, it's awesome, blah, 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 blah. So I didn't want to, like, go into the film with too many high expectations. I thought it was a film they probably spent a god-awful amount of money on that they didn't need to spend. I mean, they did a good job on it. I think that the aging hippie guy, Michael Caine, I don't think he was a WOG because, I mean, again, basic fortifications being what they are in that kind of post-apocalyptic world. If you see the film, you'll understand what I'm talking about. But, yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of a crazy world we live in. And you would think that if it were to go that particular route, the guy'd be better defended. But that said, it was a neat movie. It brought up a lot of interesting points. Children of Men, some record media for you out there. Anyway, let's get into the news. Brain case news! Everybody's worried about the brain. That's the big focus in the news these days, right? It's all about the brain. In brain case news, do you have trouble getting a good night's sleep? The University of Wisconsin-Madison researchers are working on a gadget that can help you! Do you want to go to sleep? Now, spin detector. Okay, Dr. Giulio Tononi, professor of psychiatry at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, is working on a device that uses transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS, to stimulate the slow brain waves, characteristics of deep sleep. Gentlemen, give the man his hat. TMS sends a harmless magnetic pulse through your skull to alter brain activity. In experiments, sleeping volunteers immediately begin to reproducing slow, deep waves in stage 3 and stage 4 sleep. With single pulse, we're able to induce a wave that looks identical to the waves the brain makes during normal sleep, said Giulio Tani. Scientists refer to 4 stages of sleep. In stage 1, the body becomes more relaxed. In some areas, the brain is already asleep. Stage 2, or light sleep, the brain wave signal changes to how the brain is working. Stage 3 is a deep sleep characterized by both theta and finally delta waves, the deepest stage of sleep. Finally, stage 4, with only delta waves arrives, driving your body's respiration, heart rate, blood pressure, and body temperature to its lowest point during your day. Wow. So like suspended animation toque. Sounds like a good time. Further studies need to be done before it can be determined whether TMS, transcranial magnetic stimulation, can provide the basis for a safe, helpful sleep device. Further studies need to be done and before it can be determined whether Yeah, you think? Anyway, Dr. Tononi's study was published in the April 30th edition of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. TMS is also being studied as a treatment for severe depression, mania, and auditory hallucinations, migraine headaches, and obsessive-compulsive disorder, and anything that can come from a derivative of that. So let's see. Your treatment for severe depression can become depression. Mania can be, well, fuck anything. Auditory hallucinations, that covers, like, that's a symptom, okay, to a nap, like... migraine headaches, this now becomes because, drugs can hurt your liver. This is very interesting stuff. And of course, with your transcranial magnetic stimulation hat giving you the best dream that you could possibly have, there's also sensors built into it, right? Because and that's got a cell phone on it with a GPS. So that, we want to make sure that if we detect a tumor from all the cell phone stuff that's going on, we want to be able to locate you where you are because you're important to us. 723-957-240. You are an important part of this greater, system that we're all in so that you can, help us power the new future. This is some pretty wild stuff they're talking about here. How could possibly this be used for evil? I don't know. I'm just making it up as I go along here. But anyway, it goes on to say that science fiction writers have long been hoping for sleep-inducing gadgets, too. Larry Nivens refers to a nap cap in his novel Saturn's Race. So, I guess that sounds cool. I'm not so big in the whole, sleep with wires in my head. I don't think that's a really good idea. I think I can sleep just fine without wires in my head. Thank you very much. It's another good idea that, can be used for some kind of bad stuff. Now, then we get into some other technology that I look at stuff like this and I'm like, dude, this is a classic case of, somebody in marketing got a hold of some engineers and they think this is a good idea. This is, I imagine it's got its role. But they've got some serious design flaws before they hope to field this thing. But it's been in the news. You've seen pictures of it. It's called the Bear, the Battlefield Extraction Assist Robot. Great idea. Versatile humanoid robot capable of lifting and carrying humans and other items over 600 pounds. Its applications are saying it's for casualty extraction. Yes, during a tragedy, maybe. Building evacuation, maybe. It's very slow. Long-distance transport. Okay. Search and rescue. All right, I can see that. Hospital patient transfers. How fast does this thing go? Elderly mobility aid, hazardous materials handling, mine rescue, logistics and heavy lifting, zero infrastructure warehouse automation. Interesting. The patent-pending Bear is a robot in Vecna Robotics' flagship program. Designed to locate, lift, and rescue people in harm's way, the humanoid Bear robot can do what humans can't, lift heavy loads and carry them long distances, whether on a battlefield or in a nuclear reactor core, near a toxic chemical spill, or inside a structurally compromised building after an earthquake. The Bear can rescue those in need without risking additional human life. Eh? Good idea. Good idea. You gotta like it. The Vecna Robotics Bear Project has won key seed funding in the form of a grant from the U.S. Army's Telemedicine and Advanced Technology Research Center, TATRC, part of the U.S. Army Medical Research and Material Command. See more technical details of the Bear's robot's novel construction, view answers for the more frequently asked questions about Bear, or read what the U.S. Army has to say about the Bear. Robotic extraction of combat casualties under fire from hostile or contaminated environments is the holy grail of the TATRC mobile robotics program. The bare prototype, as envisioned in the Vecta proposal, and current research contrast is the most promising approach I've seen to safely extracting casualties from urban and wooded terrain and from other areas with numerous obstacles and would impede entrance by other vehicle or aerial robots. The versatile flexibility of the bare would enable it to do multiple combat support tasks, such as loading vehicles or carrying heavy equipment, to make it more attractive than other robots that can only support a limited set of specialized tasks. Now, the interesting thing is that along with this story, stuff like this would be good for chem weapons, but the way they got it, kind of, they're showing pictures over there, you think they're going to use it on, like, live fire casualties. Like, this thing's going to go out and be in, you know, dealing with, you know, pulling people off the battlefield. Well, when you look at how it carries them, it's not so much that they carry people, they just, you know, it's more like they are presenting your casualty like a target for enemy fire. I think this thing would draw so much fire, it's not even funny. It's probably not that quiet. I mean, it's got a use. I think it should probably be pretty fast. If you're going to get people out of a war zone, I would look at the way the Aussies do their shark extraction drills and use that as a model, okay? Because if you could pull people out of the ocean, away from sharks, you would think you'd be able to get people out of harm's way. Because, well, I mean, that's the kind of speeds that we're talking about here. Shrapnel wounds, those kind of wounds, bleeding, right? If it doesn't kill you outright, it's going to be shock and bleeding. That's what's going to kill you. So we got to get them out of there, okay? But anyway, let's talk about some other... I think it's cool. And this kind of a thing, you've probably seen around. I like to see a couple more generations of it. Maybe we get something with some legs on it. You know, something that could bounce a little bit. You know, kind of a little bit more tachycoma. You know, I don't know. I'm just thinking here. Of course, I got some new concepts in the book. But, well, we're working on it. In booster news. Always liking the booster news. You know, this is coming out more and more and more. And it's going to be getting to the point, I think, in the near future where companies are going to go on prescription programs and they'll be putting, making it so that anybody can sign up and get some of these things, okay? And what are we talking about? We're talking about smart drugs. Smart drugs has been an idea. I've been following smart drugs for a while. I used to do a lot of research about it when I was much younger. Wanted to understand the mind. My old man was kind of a freak show, so I wanted to figure out what was going on with the brain. You know, how does that all work? And so that's what started getting me on the whole, like, path of nootropics and things like that. So you understand how the brain works. A lot of people don't think about their brain. You know, you can do a lot with your mind. The mind is an incredible machine, organic machine that you can do almost anything with. It's made mostly of water, fat, and sugar, right? There's a lot of... But, you know, people, of course, you can't, you know, admire somebody's brain. They can't work out their brain and flex it somehow unless they get a degree. So, you know, people don't think about that. But now they've got these very hard-to-detect brain-enhancing drugs. In booster news, increasing numbers of people are using prescription drugs like Ritalin to boost alertness and brain power, say the experts. Up to a fifth of adults, including college students and shift workers, may be using cognitive enhancers on a poll of 1,400 people. By Nature Journal suggests neuropsychologist Professor Barbara Sakin of Cambridge University said the safety evidence is urgently needed. Safety evidence is urgently needed. Experts gathered to debate this topic in a meeting in London on Monday evening. Now, this is an interesting idea. Let's say people are all these guys, right? Who's doing these drugs? Really? People in college and university, right? People who know about these drugs. People who know, who have access to these drugs. People have, like, this isn't street drugs. You're not going to be going around the corner at your local, you know, subway corner, and there's going to be some guy there and be like, hey, man, you got some neural jacking? I can get your IQ up to 256. You know, like, whatever. I can't see that. So chances are these people are very, very smart to start with. You know, probably in the smarter people in our society, right? So if all these guys start taking all these cognitive enhancers, eventually there's going to be a return spring on that. And what if we wind up making all our smartest people really, really dumb? I'm just saying, you know, it could happen, you know. Anyway, it's just a concern I would have from my understanding of, like, drug culture. Let's bear that in mind as we carry on. Experts gathered to debate this topic at a meeting in London on Monday evening. Professor Sakin's own work shows 70% of students in some U.S. universities admit to using the stimulant Ritalin, a drug tested to treat hyperactive children, to maximize their learning power. 1 in 5 of the 1,400 people who responded to the Nature survey said they had taken Ritalin, Provigil, or beta blockers for non-medical reasons. They used them for stimulant focus, concentration, and memory. One of the five, of that one in five, 62% have taken Ritalin, 44% Provigil, a drug normally prescribed to alleviate daytime tiredness of people suffering from the wear sleep disorder, narcolepsy. Most users somehow obtain the drugs on a prescription or else bought them over the internet. Although these are only snapshots of use, Professor Sahakin says it does suggest drugs are becoming more popular. Professor Sahakin says the given increase of use of these drugs outside of their intended chemical setting, safety trials were urgently needed. We do not really have the long-term efficiency and safety data in healthy people. These are studies that really need to be done. The use of these cognitive-enhancing drugs is spreading to younger and younger people. That's a concern. Methamphetamine does not have substantive abusive potential, so we have to be worried about the substance abuse problems and the use of these drugs developing in the brains of children. John Harris, professor of bioethics at the University of Massachusetts, said people should be allowed to make up their own minds about these drugs. People should be allowed to make up their own minds about these drugs? What? He said, if cognitive enhancing drugs make our lives better and make us better able to concentrate and better able to perform, this would surely be a good thing. The debate will be heard at King's Place in London. Is this bad? Should we be doing this? I mean, we're only as good as our medicine and technology make us, right? So do you think we should be, I don't know, send me some email. I'd like to know. You know, what you think of that idea? That'd be an interesting concept, you know? Should we just abandon it? Say, fuck it, use steroids, who cares? Let's see how fast we can get some poor bugger to run. You know what I mean? Let's juice him up! Let's get it on the go! You know, it's an interesting idea. It's very, you know, transhumanist, very Ray Kurzweil. I don't know if it's really the healthiest idea. I don't know if it's something that people should really be thinking about doing. It's definitely something you should be doing without any kind of doctors or medical supervision. You want to be careful with drugs, man. You want to be careful with any kind of drug. Any kind of drug. I mean caffeine. I mean a lot of these crazy drinks that are coming out now. Drug technology today is so far advanced from where it was in the 80s when I was a kid. It's out of control. Everybody has got drugs, right? Drugs make the world go around now. So you got to be really careful. You mustn't let yourself, wind up turning yourself into a slave to some organization because they got a chemical hook into you. Just something to think about. Now, in Cyberscape news, when most people think of computer games, they think of escapist titles like World of Warcraft, Call of Duty, or Super Mario. Even most games that label themselves as simulations, like the ever-popular Madden football series, are meant to more for fun than realistic training. Development studio Intelligence Gaming is behind a different kind of games. This is a different kind of game called Serious Gaming, which reminds me of Ender's Game. You know, you're in games in theory, you know, and that kind of idea. Games are designed to teach users rather than to entertain them. The company has previously created games for the United States Navy, has now been contracted by the Army to develop a new kind of game that is part virtual reality, part movie. The company teamed with the development and design firm Effective UI to create a technology called Reality V, or Reality 5, based upon Adobe's upcoming Flash 10 platform. The result is a 3D interactive simulation that could revolutionize training in the military, healthcare, retail stores, and any other number of other industries. At the core of each Reality, I'm going to call it Reality 5 experience, or Reality V. I guess instead of V, Reality. Oh, okay, we'll go with Reality V, what the hell. At the core of each Reality V experience is a full-motion movie shot in 360 degrees. This movie is projected in a special headset that strongly resembles the virtual reality goggles of yore. Yore. Yeah, so very long ago. As the user rotates, their perspective in the video rotates as well. They can only rotate around a single point as the technology doesn't yet support movement. During the videos, users are forced to make quick decisions that affect the scene's outcome. It's sort of like a choose-your-own-adventure, except you feel like you're actually there. Users can also use Reality V from their browser, but the effect is lost. The first application of the technology is the immersive cultural simulation product, a game created by the Army that teaches how to handle cultural differences in Iraq. Soldiers are forced to make decisions in real time as they watch the people surrounding them pay attention to gestures and facial expressions and decide who to pay attention to and look for any possible threats. It's actually a pretty neat idea. You know, I mean, it probably works halfway good. The first scene available involves a group of soldiers attempting to convince a small village leader to cooperate with the checkpoint station that they are setting up. And the army has ordered three more episodes taking place in Iraq. Steve Wheel and Anthony Franco, presidents of Intelligence Gaming and Effective UI, respectively, say that the team initially considered using traditional 3D models for scenes, but realized that current technology simply isn't able to capture the subtitles, the subtleties of human expressions. Instead, they choose to go with the professionally produced videos, which may, in the end, be a blessing when it comes to the licensing out to the third parties. The two companies won't reveal much about Reality V's future outside of the military, but they acknowledge that the technology could be used in a variety of fields. Medical students could take part in a stressful surgical theater, getting an idea of what goes on without getting in the way, and retail chains could use the system to create a scenario for dealing with upset customers. The companies have plans to license the filming technology out to businesses as well, so they'll be free to create their own scenes, something that could be done with 3D game models. Interesting idea, especially if applied to, you know, stores. What could you do with something like this? Well, first of all, we got to also bear in mind that this technology, when you build the hat that everybody's going to be wearing, right? Now we're going to get, just run, you know, run with me here. Let's get tinfoil hat about this. So you got this headset on that they're training it with. Of course, they got the EEG built into it, as well as, you know, the cell phone and the GPS and the brainwave-induction sleep device and all the rest of it. But anyway, that's all just in there, but that's in the fine print. You don't need to worry about that stuff. As well as, you know, the Android, Google, iPhone kill switch. So you have any thoughts, I mean, programs that aren't supposed to be there, they can just take those out right away, right? You know, that's the idea. That's where they want to go with this. But, of course, you know, they could run you through this scenario and then, you know, talking about using these things as lie detectors, they could see whether or not you would be a good paramedic, right? They can judge you based upon this thing. Would this guy be a good soldier? Would this guy be a good cop? How susceptible is this guy to PTSD? Where could the government best use this individual? Maybe you shouldn't have any say in your own well-being, right? Maybe you don't know. Because you don't have research, you know, to see how your own brain works by our patented scientific production. So we can tell you what you'd be really good at. We'll just tell you. You don't need to worry about, you know, any individuality or crazy ideas. Don't be crazy. We'll figure out. We got the science now. We'll figure out what's good for you. Don't you worry. That's what's going to happen. You just wait and see. Give it maybe a couple more years yet. But, I don't know, man. The whole thing looks kind of scary, propaganda, Big Brother-ish to me. But anyway, in flip-flop science news, how about this one? You know, they always say, I call it flip-flop science news because, well, you know, the internet's bad for you, right? Isn't the internet bad for you? Oh, yeah, no, the internet's bad for you. Ask anybody, right? You got it, you're inside all the time. It's bad for you. Everybody knows this. Right? It's been the meme forever. Get outside. Get some ideas about what's going on in the real world. Not now. No. Googling is good for grandma and grandpa, says a new study by researchers at UCLA. Now, you'll notice you probably heard this on your local news stations. And they won't say using the internet is good for grandma and grandpa. They say Googling is. I noticed this because I wrote this story down, and then my local news stories were all saying Google. Google was in there. So Google paid for this news story to go out there, which I would call as a direct violation of the Don't Be Evil clause. But anyway, apparently, using the internet is good for grandma and grandpa, says a new study by researchers at UCLA. The study, which looks at brain activity during web searches, resulted in a fascinating finding. Middle-aged to older adults who know their way around the internet had more stimulation of decision-making and complex reasoning areas of the brain than peers who were new to web surfing. What's more, reading didn't stimulate the same number of brain areas as internet searching. It's better than books! The UCLA study, funded by the Parvin Foundation, whoever the hell they are, involved 24 adults from 55 to 78 years old, half of whom had experienced searching the web from once a day to many times a day. The other half reported using the internet never to once a month. The participants didn't have any neurological conditions such as dementia and were at a similar age and education level. In order to measure the brain activity during their reading and web searches, the 24 adults underwent functional magnetic resonance imaging, MRI scans, while separately performing both activities, either a new internet search or reading text on a computer screen that was formatted to look like a book. When reading stimulated the areas of the brain in both groups, those who regularly search the internet show twice the increase in brain activity when performing new internet searches than their counterparts, especially in the areas of brain that control decision-making and complex reasoning. So you shouldn't be reading books. You should go online and buy. Senior citizen, what could possibly be on the internet that could hurt you? Let your parents run wild, you know? I don't know, man. I don't know. The study results are encouraging. That emerging computerized technologies have physiological effects and potential benefits for middle-aged and older adults, says principal investigator Gary Small, a professor of the Samuel Institute for Neuroscience and Human Behavior at UCLA, a director of the Campus Memory and Aging Research Center. Our most striking finding was that the internet search appears to engage in greater extent of neural circuitry that is not activated during reading, but only in those with prior internet experience. Small concludes that the more experience the subjects had in searches, the greater it engaged a person's brain. Although the internet use has increased among all age groups in the United States, far fewer boomers and seniors search the web daily, according to the Pew Internet and American Life Project. The report, released in August, say 40% of people 54 years old and 27% of adults 65 and older are getting information online every day, compared to about 55% of those between 18 to 49. The study surveyed 2,251 adults, 18 and older, from April 8th to May 11th of this year. You know, now it's good for you. You know, sure, now it's good for you. You know, for the longest time there, you got this, you know, it pisses me off. You know, I can't even, first of all, books are better than the internet. I hate to say this. No, well, hang on now. I should maybe say books are better than the internet. That's a pretty heavy statement. I would say that there are certain benefits that books have that the internet does not possess. You know, there is advantages to books, I would say. You know, it's like comparing apples and oranges. Although, you know, there's a lot of similarities there. You know, you really can't compare the two. You can't compare old Star Trek to new Star Trek. You can't do that. They're two totally separate animals. Yeah, they're both Star Trek, but it's totally different, right? You know what I mean? So I would just say I'd be careful with this. This reeks of spin. But you'll notice, I bet you, if you hear this story mentioned anywhere, the big Googling push, the big push there will be on the word Google and how they're inserting, you know, that's just a great example of media being controlled by corporations. In Decker News, sent to me by Big Brother Lord, President George W. Bush signed into law Monday a controversial bill that would stiffen penalties for movie and music piracy at the federal level. Hooray! The law creates an intellectual property czar who will report directly to the president on how better to protect copyrights both domestically and internationally. The Justice Department has argued the creation of this position would undermine its authority. Yes, you are my minister of propaganda. If you steal anything online, the president will order the Jack Bauers of the world to come kick your ass. The law also toughens criminal laws against piracy and counterfeiting, although critics have argued the measures goes too far and risks punishing people who have not infringed. The Recording Industry Association of America and the MPAA of America backed the bill. Who gives a shit if they back the bill? As did the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Well, great. Good deal. These are private organizations. Why are they making laws? By becoming law, the Pro-IP Act sends a message to IP criminals everywhere that the U.S. will go the extra mile to protect American innovation, says Tom Dono, President and CEO of U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Counterfeiting and piracy cost the United States nearly $250 billion annually, according to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. What? Rick Cotton, general counsel for NBC Universal, said the bill would give movie and music makers more tools to fight what he calls a tidal wave of counterfeiting and piracy everywhere, from medical devices to automobile parts to media by organized crime. Yeah, you wouldn't want any of those counterfeit medical devices. You know, I only want to buy a licensed stethoscope. You know, I wouldn't want one of these inferior stethoscopes because, you know, a lot of the world doesn't have clean water, and they're worried about, you know, medical supplies, making sure they got the right brand name on it. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you kidding me? You know, it's, yeah. That's at the core of what discussion is about, he said. It's not about teenagers. Oh, no, no, no. It's about people who are dying in third world nations because they can't afford the really good drugs. That's what this is actually about. It'd be nice, actually, if this kind of was about teenagers. You know, I'd feel better about everything if it was actually about teenagers, but it's not. Unfortunately, it's all about, you know, big pharma is what it's about. Khan said he did not expect an IPCR to be named before Bush's term ended in January. Richard Asaga, spokesman for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, said he was relieved to see lawmakers had stripped out of measures to have the Justice Department file civil lawsuits against pirates, which would have made attorneys pro bono personal lawyers for the content industry. Interesting. But the advocacy group Public Knowledge has to argue the law went too far, especially given that the use of copyrighted material was already shrinking. Public Knowledge particularly opposed a measure that allowed for the forfeiture of devices used in piracy. Oh, this iPod here, this got bad. You've got pirate music on it. That's mine. This computer, yeah, that's mine. The server, yeah, that's mine. The TV, yeah, that's mine too. What the hell? You can't take my couch! Are you insane? It's my couch! Let's suppose that there's one computer in a house, and one person uses it to downloads, and one for homework. The whole computer goes, said the Public Knowledge spokesman, Art Brodsky. Brodsky argues that, at best, the bill was unnecessary because the recording and movie industry had the right to take accused infringers to court. There's lots and lots and lots of penalties for copyright violations. They've got all the tools they need. So it's all about terror. It's all about scaring the hell out of people. That's what it's all about. And let's talk about the future coming down the pipe, like the Tales from the Afternow scenario. Let's talk about terror everywhere. Let's talk about people being frightened. Well, of course, in the post-apocalyptic future, we're all kind of halfway hoping for it, so we don't have to pay our credit cards and we can run away from our problems. That is until, of course, we scrape our knees and we realize we're going to die from an infection. Post-apocalyptic future, not so good with the medicine. So you have to come up with a way to recycle the planet. That's right, terraform home. We've trashed enough of it, and that's what they're doing in London, England with waste gas. Waste gas news, London, England. You might have thought that recycling is limited to paper, plastics, and glass. Well, think again. A California company is developing a new technique for recycling carbon dioxide and turning it back into fuel. Carbon Sciences believe they have made a breakthrough with the technology, which says they can transform CO2 back into basic fuel building blocks efficiently. Their biocatalytic process converts CO2 into base hydrocarbons, C1 methane, C2 ethane, and C3 propane, which can then be utilized to make a higher grade fuels like gasoline and jet fuel. We're very excited about what we've seen in the lab. We've had some promising results, as Derry McLish, president of CEO of the Santa Barbara Place Company, told CNN. By employing biocatalysis, using natural catalysts to perform chemical reactions, Carbon Sciences hope to bypass the problem of inefficient energy ratios, which can render many CO2 recycling projects pointless. We don't use high temperatures or high pressures, which is a huge advantage in terms of scaling the project. Up, McLish said. In the future, McLish envisions Carbon Sciences setting up shop next door to a large CO2 emitters, coal, gas-fired plants, and oil refineries, recycling concentrated streams of CO2 discharged from fossil fuel plants. Trying to make CO2 out of natural air just wouldn't be worth it. Not yet. The beauty of this system is the whole infrastructure to distribute, to market, and to use is already in place. The recycling process has 5 main stages. After rudimentary purification and regeneration of the biocatalysis, the CO2 is transferred to a biocatalytic reactor matrix, which where mass quantities of biocatalysts function in a matrix of liquid reaction chambers breaking down CO2 and turning it into hydrocarbons. Pay attention, there's a test on this at the end. Liquids are then filtered and gases are extracted through condensers, ready for conversion to a higher grade fuel. Carbon Sciences are just one of many companies all over the world who are beavering away, trying to find effective methods of renewing CO2. The science is well known, but practically energy effectively devices are in short supply. You know, I'm gonna have to step back here and say, as a Canadian, I object to the use of intellectual property by this particular news story. You know, beavering is a strictly Canadian term. And I think with the Pro-IP Act and the DMCA Act, I have a case for this. We could probably get some lawyers in on this. And we could just, you know, start sending out lawsuits and slap suits. Ridiculous stuff like that. Because that's how, you know, don't get me wrong. I think that artists should get paid. But come on, man. There's a limit. All right? Let's not get absolutely psychotic about this. It doesn't make a lot of sense. You know what I mean? Like, come on. I don't know. I think that there's probably, you know... Sorry, I get pissed off with this. That Pro-IP thing really pissed me off. This idea here, though, this is a good idea. This whole dude with the recycling the gases, I think that's cool. It'd be interesting to see whether or not this is actually going to clean the planet up or if it's just going to cork the pollution output. But it's an interesting idea. Now, Britain, of course, you know, they're getting more and more post-apocalyptic every day. Really, they are. I mean, some of the stuff that's going on in Britain, man, it's just turning into, like, some kind of crazy George Orwell. It's turning into Children of Men over there, man. Now, check this Gattaca news out. Send me my morps. Defendants can't deny an encryption key because of fears of data it unlocks will incriminate them. A British appeals court has ruled. Which means that if you get arrested in England, right... That means that if they get a hold of your stuff that's encrypted, they can get that encryption key out of you. So they can use whatever measures they want to get that encryption key out of you. And if you don't give it to them, you're not cooperating and you're breaking the law. Which means they can punish you as though the most worst terrible thing in the world is on it, even if they can't break the encryption. Which, believe you me, they can. The case marked an interesting challenge in the UK's Regulation and Investigatory Powers Act, RIPA, which in part compels someone served under the Act to divulge an encryption key used to scramble data on a PC's hard drive. Failure to do so could mean 2-year prison sentence or up to 5 years if the case involves national security. And you can bet you're going to go for, like, a bad... So right now, I digress. They're not going to be doing it for, like, the worst possible thing, but we're still... Give me your passwords. No? Okay, well, I'm going to beat it out of you over the next 24 months. Oh, is it national security, which could be anything, you know, anything that's related? If the word terrorism is used, well, then it's national security, so you can do 5. The appeals court has heard a case in which 2 suspects refused to give their encryption keys, arguing that disclosure was incompatible with a privilege against self-incrimination. Police also seized encrypted material on a disc belonging to the first man. When the second man was arrested, police saw he had partially entered an encryption key into his computer. In its ruling, the appeals court says an encryption key is no different than a physical key and exists separately from a person's will. The key to a computer equipment is no different to the key to a locked drawer, the court found. The contents of the drawer exist independently of the suspect, so does the key to it. The contents may not be incriminating, the key is may or may not be incriminating, the key is neutral. The right against self-incrimination is not without bounds, and suspects who can't refuse to give DNA sample if properly compelled. RIPA, passed in 2000 by the UK Parliament, is intended to give police new powers to conduct covert surveillance and wiretap operations to respect new communication technologies. Communication technologies. The third part of RIPA concerning the disclosure of encryption keys came to force in October 2007. It is delayed since when RIPA was approved, law enforcement wasn't seeing wide use of encryption. It is also one of the more controversial parts of RIPA, as critics said companies could be at risk if law enforcement mishandles their data. To obtain a key, the so-called Section 49 requests first must be approved by a judiciary authority, chief police, the Customs and Excise Commission, or a person ranking higher than brigadier or equivalent. Authorities can also mandate the recipients of Section 49 request not to tell anyone except their lawyers that they have received it. Isn't that interesting? So don't think that encryption saves you, because it really doesn't. And believe you me, your whole perspective changes quite rapidly once you get put in prison. Once you get put in prison, you will find that there will be a lot of things which I have said in the past that will suddenly make a lot of sense to you, and at the time you completely and totally disagreed with me. Trust me when I say this. Okay, so the number one thing here is with logs, again, for those of you playing along at home, is survival. And I just don't mean survival. I would like to steal that guy who wrote that great book. Send me a copy of it, Sir Thrival. I want people to thrive. I want people to be happy, have some kind of quality of life so their world doesn't suck too incredibly bad. And you're not going to be able to do that if you're in jail. So, in the words of, you know, Pierce Brosnan in that movie, don't get caught. Getting caught sucks. So don't rely on things like encryption. You know what I'm saying? In body electric news, sent to me by Renegade Rabbit. Interesting. You know, they always send me the best news stories. Renegade, you do some good stuff. Mr. Anthropic Gods also sends me some really good stuff, too. But, you know, I get a lot of really good people sending me news stories, and thanks a lot, guys. Anyway, pocket gadgets in body electric news. Pocket gadgets ever hold more information, but still mostly uncontrolled islands of data. What? Hang on. Pocket gadgets hold ever more information, but are still mostly unconnected islands of data. So your iPod doesn't talk to your watch. One of the most promising ways to change that is to link up a person's devices by using the human body as a conduit. The same approach would make it easier to share data like business cards or photos with other people. Options such as body area networks, BAN, include skin-clinging radio waves or tiny vibrations through the skeleton that let people swap data with a handshake. The IEEE, the U.S. body that defines local area wireless networking protocol, is already working on a standard for body area networks. Now, the Electronic Telecommunications and Research Institute in Daejeon, South Korea, wants these new methods of sharing data to revolutionize public advertising. Billboards, electronic advertising, displays are inherently inefficient because the bulk of the people who catch sight of them have no interest to the product that is being promoted. The Korean patent gets around this problem by suggesting that people are using a body area network could touch an electronic poster to tune it into their interests. The display would download details about the person's interests and recent activities. Display and relevant advert. Downloads like a detailed product brochures could also be offered. Whether people would want to interact with ads in this way is another matter. To address this, the patent suggests goodies could be offered too. For example, special offer coupons or even music and films. Billboards in places where people wait for buses or trains would be ideal spots to get people interacting, suggests the team. Yeah, then you wonder with people fighting about who has control of billboards. Not really a fantastic idea. Further to that, I mean, we don't even have a clue as to what, you know, body area networks are going to do to the to your body. I mean, you know, we're not really designed. You got to look after your body, okay? We're all going to be, like, pumping ourselves, and we're going to make ourselves sick, okay? You're going to wind up getting the cancer. You're going to wind up getting some kind of weird sick disease or something. Not a really great idea. You know, I don't know. I would approach this with some pretty good caution here. I'm just saying. You know, I would approach it with some pretty serious caution. In cyber war news, how about this one here? You know, nothing like a bit of terror to get you worked up. Let's get some fear out there. The FBI's newly appointed chief of cybersecurity warned today that a couple dozen, like 24 countries, are eager to hack U.S. government, corporate, and military networks. While he refused to provide any country-specific details, FBI Cyber Division Chief Sean Henry told reporters that at a roundtable, cooperation with foreign law enforcement is one of the Bureau's highest priorities, and added the United States has had incredible success fostering overseas partnerships. He compared the situations to 1999, where he had headed the FBI's National Infrastructure Intrusion Center's Computer Intrusion Unit, and there wasn't all that much we could do in the face of a cyber attack. Henry said certain countries have mounted aggressive campaigns to attack U.S. internet assets, like the .gov, .mil, and .com web domains. Some are interested in sensitive research and developing data, while others, like terrorist organizations, see the value in stealing and selling sensitive data to fund physical attacks. The threat we face from organized groups that have infiltrated home computers, corporate computers, government computers is substantial, and its impact on economy and national security is a major concern, Henry said. And then he hinted that the announcement expected Thursday will be of an example of really good cooperation between the FBI and foreign counterparts. The department's caseload of active cybercrime investigations is well into the thousands, and the number has increased steadily in the past year, Henry said. That is due to a greater sense of awareness about the amount of money that is to be made illegally. Malicious activity by armies of corrupted computers known as botnets and criminal gangs is on the rise, and the chief security of the agency, public awareness, is the threat is also growing. The FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center has fielded more than a million complaints since May 2000. The center hears from 18 to 20,000 victims per month. At the briefing, Henry would not comment in detail on President Bush's largely classified government-wide initiative designed to better protect federal computer networks, which is being spearheaded by the Homeland Security Department. He shied away from commenting on the forthcoming report by the Center for Strategic and International Studies Commission on Cybersecurity for the 44th Presidency, which will be recommending that the government's cybersecurity leadership in the next administration should reside at the White House. Both have been topics and hearings of the 110th Congress. But wait, didn't we also have that same cat who's reporting to the president about things like intellectual property? I wonder if he's going to be involved with these cats. I think he will be. Henry's comments came a day after Homeland Security Secretary Chertoff spoke at the Bush administration's cybersecurity agenda, noting the topic will be a major part of the next president. Unlike other areas of national security, the cyber realm is not exclusively or even largely a federal responsibility, Chertoff said in a U.S. Chamber of Commerce speech that stressed the important role of the private sector. Interesting. I think that's very, very interesting indeed. I wonder now how they're going to keep pushing this until we get to the door kickers. You know, they'll probably, when they're going to start locking you up for data, they're going to start, you know, charging you, and they're going to start profiling everybody, and that's when you'll really start to see the censorship. They got to have something to censor before they start censoring it, right? They're going to start tracking all the stuff on the internet, and very, very soon, you know, books are going to start to filter away, and, you know, they'll slowly lose permanent records, and we'll lose it all. And we'll all be left with just the internet, the last person's version of the licensed truth, if you're allowed to see it. Because that's the direction we're headed if we're not careful. Guys, make sure you buy your books, buy some books, and read the books you buy. I do one of those. I'll let you figure out which one that is. Most of us, isn't that a problem? I mean, how many of us out there, seriously, we all go out there and we go hit the bookstores and we, like, buy books, and you got, like, you got a house full of books. And then there's, like, you know, you got books under your bed, you got books everywhere. You know, I mean, I keep buying these books. And, you know, I never give away my books either, which is, it's a miracle to me. People are like, you know, oh, well, I gave away all my books. And I'm like, what the hell? I mean, I try not to be a pack rat. It's true, I try not to be a hoarder. Those of us out there that are hoarders, you know what I'm talking about. But, wow, I'll tell you, if the world ends tomorrow and I got nothing better to do, I could probably read for about 4 or 5 years, you know, really. In Corp Cop News, my favorite people, Blackwater. You gotta love these guys. You know, you really gotta love these guys. These guys are just the best. I should go down there and take a course. I really should. These guys just crack me up. In Corp Cop News, sent to me by Saria, Blackwater USA, the company at the center of a brewing storm over private contractors, isn't letting a little controversy get them down. No, they're focused on expansion. The latest addition is a ship that can use from everything anti-terrorism to special operations missions. Lost amid the latest brouhaha was a small report that Blackwater had bought a refurbished MacArthur, bought and refurbished the MacArthur, a 183-foot ship that boasts state-of-the-art amateur navigation system, full GMD DSS communications, CTEL, broadband, dedicated command and control mast, helicopter's desk, hospital, and multiple support vessel capabilities. Under the new banner of Blackwater Maritime Solutions, the world's most notorious private security contractor now has the three services, land, air, and sea. Okay, well, it isn't quite the Armada. According to the Blackwater literature, the MacArthur could cover a number of humanitarian missions and added to military roles. Other nifty capabilities include UAV launch and recovery, function as a mothership supporting smaller patrol craft and helicopters, and provides support to combat illegal unregulated, unreported fishing activities worldwide. The company reportedly wouldn't comment on the vessel or when news about the purchase came about last month, but Blackwater brochures on MacArthur are prominently displayed at its booth at this year's Associated of the U.S. Army meeting now in Washington. By the way, Blackwater, based both at AUSA here in Washington, is working very, very hard to revamp their image. Yeah, I would think so. You know, That's exactly what's going on. And that's why, you know, I personally... I almost made it the whole show before I brought up scuba. You know, almost did it. But, you know, hey, there's something to be said for exploring a planet three times the size of Earth. Daily Hacks today. Let's talk about hobo packets. Yeah. I mean the packets that go in messages, but no. Hobo packets are a really neat idea for how to make very, very quick food. This is from his website. In my quest to give you quick and easy dinner recipe each week, I'm bringing you hobo packets. These are traditional Boy Scout meal with good reason. Kids just love getting to design their own dinner, and they're very little work for adults. You know how you often feel you're running a short order kitchen? Having to make four different dishes to specialty orders can be so very frustrating. One doesn't like onions, the other doesn't like carrots, yada, yada, yada. Hobo pockets make that easy. The recipe can be modified to use chicken or even pork, but ground beef is my personal favorite due to its taste. I'm just so used to the hobo pockets with ground beef. Its convenience and its cost. This can even make great vegetarian meals simply by omitting meat and adding more veggies. Frugal and filling. Yeah, absolutely. Homemade hot pockets. You gotta love them. As well, let's talk about the mind. Gotta keep the brain sharp. A brain upgrade. Stanford University has launched 10 online courses in the areas of computer sciences and electrical engineering. Free to download, each course includes lectures, videos and transcripts, handouts, and other assignments and exams. You don't have to register. You won't be able to interact with the professor of the course, but you can with other virtual students doing the coursework. The 10 current courses are divided into three categories: Introduction to Computer Science, Artificial Intelligence, Linear Systems, and Optimization. Very, very cool. Very, very cool. Maybe, if you're interested in that kind of stuff, you should take some of those courses, find out if that's a direction you want to go. Because let me tell you, the future belongs to robots. Okay? You want to learn something, kids? All you minors who are listening to this show, and you know you shouldn't be, because this show is not for people who are really young. I don't know why, probably because I'm afraid I'll go to jail if young people listen to this. But skirting the issues, guys, seriously, like, you know, you should really think about what you got going on in the way of education. Because at the end of the day, it's better to be paid for what you know than for what you do. I think. But that said, you know, what you do is kind of what you know. But I digress. You get where I'm going with this. Let's get to some Recmedia. I got a whole bunch of alternative news links for you. Very, very cool. And we're all monkeys. One of those TED Talks by this woman named Savage Rumbaga's work with Bonobo apes, which can understand spoken language, learn tasks by watching, forces audience to rethink how much of what a species can do is determined by biology and how much is cultural exposure. Now, this is a very interesting thing because it shows these monkeys that are very, 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 very clever, and I have one word for you. Well, two words. I have a concept for you, and that would be Blackwater Biological Weapons Division. Do you suppose that these guys would be able to make you your brand new foot soldiers for the war of tomorrow? I think they could. And with that notion, that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. If you cannot donate, please distribute. But if you can donate to the show, and I think everybody can, the best thing I would love, honest to God, I was talking about this with Sim the other day, because I've got some ideas that I'm building towards a better and brighter future for all of us. It's true. I should have, like, choir music in the background. Lord, send me your money. I was thinking what would be a really cool idea as a way to sort of generate funds, because if you're going to do anything, seriously, if you're going to do anything, you need to have some kind of subscription-based funding system on the go. So what I was thinking is if we could come up with some sort of a number, I was going to say $5 a month. If everybody threw me $5 a month, which is the price of a cup of coffee, which sadly enough is the price of a cup of coffee, if you get $1.25 worth of entertainment out of the show, subscribe, give me $5 a month. You probably lose $5 a month. You know what I'm saying? Is it worth a beer? Would you mind buying me a beer every month? You know, would you do that? For the show. I mean, fair ball. If you don't think, fuck you, Sean. I don't want to buy you a beer. But if you think the show's worth it, we'll work for beer. $5 a month. Subscribe to it. You probably wouldn't even notice it coming out of the account. I get enough people doing that. Man, you could see the shows we could produce. The minute I'm able not to work, what do you suppose I'm going to do with my time? Well, you're going to lie on your fat ass at home, Sean. Well, that only works for a while. Then I get bored. Then I think of stuff to do. And a bored Sean is a dangerous Sean, but it does make for some good filming. So, you know, I'm just saying, If you can donate, please do so by clicking on the Donate tab on the Dark Atlas website or send an envelope to Rant Media Blue Studios, Box 18121, 1215C, 56th Street, Delta, BC, Canada, V4M2M4. And, of course, I want to thank the Army Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have information that you would like to get to me, you're going to reach me at newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, please check out Psytrance. It's the best stuff ever. And remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we are at each other's throats. So until next time, everyone, hey, that's what server said. End of line.
Open the door. Get him out of there. No, wait.
Much we can learn from each other if we can negotiate it.